Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market, a dynamic leader in the quality food business, a mission-driven company that aims to set the standards of excellence for food retailers. For more information, visit WholeFoodsMarket.com.
I'm Laura Stanley, host of Inside School Food. You are listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit HeritageRadioNetwork.org for thousands more.
Welcome to Radio Cherry Bomb, coming to you live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn. I'm your host, Julia Turchin. I write about food, and my favorite part about what I do is finding out the stories behind great recipes, restaurants, and more. Every Wednesday, I get to have these conversations on air, bringing the pages of Cherry Bomb magazine to life by interviewing some of the most interesting women in the world of food. You can listen to the show live every Wednesday at 2 o'clock on heritageradionetwork.org or download it anytime on iTunes. Today's show is all about logistics. It's going to be full of practical, proactive advice for both existing and aspiring entrepreneurs. In the first segment, I'll be joined by Marissa Lippert, a nutritionist and business owner who runs Nourish Kitchen and Table in Greenwich Village, home of the best coconut macaroon ever. She's here to talk about one of the biggest and most important topics out there, which is how to get money to get your business off the ground. And in the second segment, I'll be talking to Jasmine Moy, an accomplished lawyer who specializes in the food industry and has worked with everyone from restaurateurs to chefs, makers of food products, even hotel owners. I would like to encourage all listeners to get their notebooks ready. I think these two accomplished women are a wealth of inspiration and information. Marissa, we're going to start with you. Hi.
Hi, how are you? Thanks.
Good.
Having me.
Yeah, I'm so happy you're here. Let's start with a little background, just for listeners who might not be familiar with your work, just so they can get to know you a little bit better. So where are you from originally?
I am originally from Northern Virginia, outside of D.C.
Ah, awesome. And when did the food bug get you? Oh, that sounds terrible.
The food bug bit. I always tell this story. I have a distinct recollection of being probably 2 or 3 years old on my parents' kitchen floor and like flipping through the Sunday magazine or the Sunday coupons in the paper and being sort of enamored by pictures of food. Granted, they were coupons, but my mom used to have like stacks of gourmet magazines and Bon Appetit, and she's a really wonderful cook in her own right. And I think it just captivated me from a young age, and my family was big into food as well.
Awesome. Yeah, I know a lot of your recipes at Nourish are sort of influenced by a lot of family.
Yes, we like to tell a story at Nourish. A lot of our dishes and our both our savory dishes and our baked goods have either a familial connection or some random tangent of a story that we use for inspiration of some sort.
Yeah, I love that. As a cookbook writer, that to me, you're speaking my language. speaking of Nourish, tell everyone exactly what it is. Do you describe it? Is it a restaurant to you, or a prepared food store, a juice bar, a coffee bar, a magazine?
It's a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I would say it's a cafe and a takeaway food shop. We focus on seasonal ingredients, local purveyors, and authenticity, which is a great word. We do a lot in a tiny space. We have grown a catering arm. We just hit our first year anniversary last month.
Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. It was a good mark. And so we do a lot of sort of in-house business for the neighborhood. And then we do delivery, we do catering. We have a lovely line of juices, which is always big. But our primary focus is just, you know, beautiful, fresh food that sort of happens to be healthy. I'm a registered dietitian by training and a food lover and, a foodie, if you want to call it that. So I try to merge the best of both worlds and really bridge healthy eating habits and beautiful, delicious, fresh food. So
that's amazing, because prior to opening Nourish, you were working full-time as a dietitian?
Yeah. I still do private consulting and counseling, but I had a practice, nutrition counseling practice, for about 10 years prior to opening. So
and now you're able to just sort of put it out there and...
Yeah, it was really, you know, the idea spawned from conversations I was having in my office with clients around, you know, just how to eat, which is something that should in theory come so inherently, and it doesn't for a lot of people. And I just saw a niche or sort of void in the market for what Nourish does. We all of our food is prepared, ready to go. It's on a beautiful marble countertop in gorgeous serving dishes. And so it's very sort of aesthetically eye-catching right when you walk in. No, feels, hopefully.
The space feels great.
Thank you.
Yeah, no, everything's beautiful and it feels like the food is the kind of food you want to eat kind of on a daily basis.
Right.
But it also just looks, well, like it looks like, yeah, I want my home to like be like this. Like I want this to be the kind of food I eat in the setting I live in, that kind of feeling. So
we try to make it sort of aspirational, but really accessible,
comfortable
and you know, just lifestyle oriented.
Awesome. And what's, describe your role.
I am the owner, and the sole partner. So all the fun stuff falls on me.
Not scary at all.
People ask, the first word out of my mouth when people say like, what made you open Nourish? I'm like, maybe insanity. I'm not really sure. No, it's been an amazing ride and, we're really looking forward to lots of new initiatives and interesting things happening in year two.
Awesome.
So,
I want to rewind
kind
of to a year ago, if not even before that, just to talk about when you opened the business and just getting it off the ground. How long did it take you to find the space after you had the idea that you were really going to go for this?
It took me, I want to say over a year and a half.
Wow.
I had sort of been conceiving the space in my head for at least 4 or 5 years. And I knew that it sort of probably needed to be in the West Village, or that was my target neighborhood based on a lot of factors. And I would like run, I have my running loop a couple times a week. So I was really traversing the neighborhood.
Kill two birds.
Yeah. You know,
two
organic birds, of course, heritage breed. So I really got to know the neighborhood very well, down to street corners, and just got to understand like the real estate market over there a little bit better.
And you're in a great, I mean, you're next to the Equinox Gym. You're next to all the people who.
And it took me a year and a half to get there and almost signing on 2 other spaces. So
yeah. Well, I think
when the stars align,
yeah,
it's meant to
for
be.
For sure. And then, so once you found the space after a year and a half of looking, how long between finding the space and then opening the doors for business?
Let's see. A little under a year, rather.
Okay.
I think I first spotted the space in like August of 2012. Mm-hmm. And we signed the lease in October, and the lease started at December 1st, 2012. And then we opened July.
So like 6 months later.
Yeah, July 2013.
Awesome. So that's pretty fast for me.
Could have been a lot faster.
And so during those 6 months, besides just sort of renovations on the space, how did you gear up to really start this business? Did you take any business classes? Was that...
I took a couple classes actually through, NYBDC and, I'm blanking on the other government.
What does the BDC stand for?
New York Business Development Center,
okay,
sorry.
Awesome.
And they were actually instrumental in helping me garner, a small business loan. And, there's some really great resources for restaurant businesses and owners that the city provides. And I did take a couple of, you know, smaller seminars. But I had a really solid business plan and financial projections in place already. And I had, you know, this isn't a concept that sort of came out of thin air. I'd really been fine tuning it and essentially boiling it down for at least 2 or 3 years beforehand.
Amazing. And all that work means you now have a business that has passed its 1 year mark, which is sort of a big deal.
Knock on wood.
Let's talk a little bit more about the financing. I know you mentioned that helped you get to the point where you could procure a small business loan. You also have investors. You have 11 investors.
I have a bunch of friends and family investors. Mm-hmm. It was just the way I was able to fund this particular space. Have a small business loan for about half the funds, and a group of friends and family investors who really just, you know, I don't have tons and tons of experience in the restaurant industry, but I really had 10 years of market research around what people were actually looking for.
And the audience that you're cooking for.
Right,
and serving.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
And they really believed in me, in the concept, and in the potential for brand growth and development, and hopefully what we can do in years to come.
Awesome. In terms of getting those investors to sign on, something you and I spoke about before today was just sort of being a woman in this industry mm-hmm. and getting money to make this sort of dream a reality. And it reminded me of in 2007, which now feels kind of like a while ago, there was an article in New York Magazine that I remember like where I was when I read it. And I found it. And it's called A Woman's Place. And it was a pretty short piece. And they just, New York Magazine contacted seven prominent female chefs just to talk about how they sort of run their kitchens and businesses. And part of me was kind of like, it's a little upsetting to see how much hasn't changed, mm-hmm. I think, from this piece. That's not forever ago, but it's definitely not yesterday. But there was one section that I just wanted to read some parts of before asking you about your experience. And so the question they asked these chefs were, why aren't there more women chefs in New York? Is it harder to raise money as a woman? And Anita Lowe, who was actually on the show last mm-hmm. week, she answered and she said, I kind of get the feeling that there are boys out there who have people running after them giving money. Another chef responded, they play golf together. Maybe they play poker together. Maybe we should go play poker. I don't know. And Rebecca Charles, who runs Pearl Oyster Bar also in the West Village, said, it's the boys' club. It's incredible. I never used to buy into stuff like that. And then New York Magazine asked, why don't women get the money? And a chef responded, I think men aren't as nervous about asking. They seem to be able to say, listen, this is what I want. Give it to me. Women, I think, have a harder time with it. So I just wanted to know about your experience, not only asking for money, but receiving it, and what you mm-hmm. did to prepare for those conversations, who you talked to.
I think the article is still very, very relevant. And it's something that, regardless of industry, I talk about, I probably had a conversation about last week with some, you know, a female in business or who is entrepreneurial, or who is looking to start something. And it's hard. It was actually interesting. I was talking to a friend who works for a corporation, just the other week. And she was saying that she feels, because she's had this experience, she feels that women don't necessarily need women mentors. They need a male mentor who has a daughter who is over the age of 18, which just in terms of, building confidence. Yeah, I was like, really? What? Oh, wait, that actually makes a lot of sense. Because it's not, look, I think any woman who starts her own business, or man for that matter, clearly is going after something, and they have to go after something. But it's definitely challenging to have confidence 100% of the time and say like, no, my business is going to fly off the charts. Like, you need to give me money because of X, Y, and Z, because sometimes you're not always confident, and it's really hard every single day, particularly in the height of summer when it's, you know, everyone flies out of the city, to remember those things and to remember why you opened the business, what it has the possibility of doing.
Especially if it's a business you haven't done before.
Right. Or if it's in any business, whether you have or haven't, if it's just in the state of sort of infancy, it takes time to grow. My dad, the first time I opened my initial business 10 years ago, or however long it was, he told me, like, just give yourself 2 years and try not to stress as much as you can, which, you know, you go through different days and different amounts of stress. But that 2 year mark, it was amazing how on point he was with it. And so going back to really kind of the essence of your question, I think, I don't know why we have females have a harder time asking, but we do. And I just think it's something you have to acknowledge and be conscious of and figure out ways to be more comfortable having conversations with more people. I network all the time. I love connecting people. I love, you know, being out and socializing and certainly around business things, but it's oddly hard for me to like plant that seed in terms of like, hey, we're actually doing really well, but I need more money.
Yeah.
And I think it's like this stigma of admitting the fact that we're growing and we need money.
Yeah. And you mentioned earlier about the importance of not just being funded, but being well funded. So you can weather certain things, like, for example, the month of August, especially in the neighborhood where your business is, the population who lives there tends to be on vacation.
Yes, which is lovely, but I am not on vacation.
Yeah. So how do you determine that original number? How do you figure out, like, how much money do you need from the loan? How much money do you need from investors? Are you,
I mean,
you're,
I think,
projecting
it's,
numbers through a year? Or
I actually my projections, I projected for through a 5-year period, and had spoken with, you know, I spoke with a lot of colleagues in the restaurant industry, and you know, had a pretty good outlook, but it's a projection, and you're never going to know till you're in the thick of it. And you can, honestly, you cannot have enough money. I would do things a little differently in round two in terms of the actual amount, just because I know now, and like every business magazine or article or whatever around new businesses will tell you, businesses will fail if they are not well funded. And it's true, because it could be the best idea in the world, but if you can't
support it,
if you can't support it,
and there's so many things that you just can't predict, and we've had a lot of chefs on the show who talk about, like, you know, one of the most important things to be an executive chef is to be a really great plumber, because you're always going to be fixing something, or an electrician, or, you know, things break,
like our coffee machine is on the fridge right now, or I don't know why.
I don't know, maybe someone got locked out,
and wait, our AC doesn't work, and it's mid July and there goes like $7,500, and that's, you know, that's a lot of money.
I want to talk about that moment about reaching out to people, whether it's investors to get money for your business, or if it's just reaching out to just people you want to be connected to who could potentially support your business in ways that aren't necessarily financial. I know that, I mean, the example I know of how we met was you left a comment on a picture I put on Instagram, and that's how we connected. And then the next thing I knew, we were having like a coffee and delicious pastries at your table. And what are some ways that you reach? I mean, I think that's
great. To reach out to people. Yeah. I mean, I think, to be honest, like, sometimes you just have to have balls, for lack of a better word. Sorry. Females can grow them too. Didn't you know?
Welcome to Radio
Church. Yeah. But no, I mean, I think you have to have some chutzpah sometimes to, you know, I had followed you for a long time, and I really love what you do. And then I heard you at Cherry Bomb's Jubilee conference and was even more enamored. And then I happened to be talking with a colleague who owns a business outside of food, and she mentioned your name. She's like, oh, I think you guys would get along really well. And I was like, you know what? I don't really know how to get her email, but I Instagrammed at you with blind hope.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for responding. No,
and I think we live in a world that, you know, the more social media and all that stuff there is, like, the more connected we are, but also the harder it can be to connect, like, in person. Right. So I'm happy to know you. I'm happy you reached out in some way or another. And, you know, I think I just encourage everyone to do that for whatever reason.
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, the worst thing that can happen is you don't hear back from that person, but you know that you actually tried, and you have no idea where that connection or conversation could go. Yeah. In a lot of cases, me sending an email or, you know, having the confidence to introduce myself to someone at a work event or a dinner or a party or whatever it is, or even cold calling sometimes, it's turned into great things.
Yeah. Well, so your business is... It's doing great. I mean, we're so happy to
thank you
to see
getting
it
there.
To see it flourishing. What's next for Nourish?
That remains
stay open.
Stay open through August. No, we are sort of looking into a couple of different things, and for the coming year, we do a lot of catering, and are potentially looking for an outside space to support that, which we would need investment for.
Like a commissary kitchen.
Like a commissary kitchen, potentially. We've been asked to open in other neighborhoods and other locations that, you know, we're grateful for being asked. That's not necessarily, you know, in the immediate future, but we don't know.
Yeah.
We're talking to some other potential partners just about, like, brand collaborations and interesting stuff for
cool.
us.
So. Exciting.
Yeah.
Well, if there's anyone who can get it all done, I think you are well equipped. We're going to go into the Cherry Bomb Rapid Fire Q&A, which is a sort of a little bit lighter and, you know, not about any big business questions, just fun questions we ask every guest who comes on. So no pressure. Number one, sweet or salty?
Both.
Totally fine. Two, what did you have for breakfast today?
I had fruit salad, iced coffee, and a couple bites of a tamale that my chef brought in from her,
delicious.
This lovely little woman in her neighborhood.
Awesome. Was there a filling?
One had mole, I think, and the other had like a salsa verde, and they were both
like
delicious.
My kind of breakfast. If I were to look into your refrigerator right now at home, what might I be surprised to find?
That there's actually food in there. I do try to cook at least a couple times a week. There's a lot of produce, fruits, vegetables, eggs from the green market in my neighborhood. There's a lot of wine. And as my dear friend in Asheville likes to comment on, a lot of fancy condiments, which and hot sauces.
I feel like that's a real New York thing.
Yeah.
What's your go-to snack?
Usually a piece of fruit with peanut butter or almond butter.
And what's your favorite time of day?
Nighttime, when it's wine time.
1 o'clock.
Yeah, well, I was going to say 1 o'clock. Now I love, you know, I love doing casual dinners and relaxed dinners with friends, or cooking myself like after a long day, and sort of that's sort of my unwinding time. So I tend to be a more creative creature at night.
At nighttime.
Yeah.
And where do you want to travel to next?
Well, I am heading to LA next week, but big travels. I would love to go back to Turkey or Portugal.
Awesome. That sounds great. And lastly, what was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
My mom's lasagna or her Asian chicken wings.
Asian chicken wings?
Oh, yeah. They're like the bomb.
Okay, we're going to have to talk about that during the break. Marissa, thank you so much for being here today, and especially for talking so openly and honestly about running your business and starting it. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're going to be back with Jasmine Moy.
Thanks for having me.
Today's program has been brought to you by Whole Foods Market. Seeing a need to help people sort through all the misinformation about healthy eating, Whole Foods Market added a seventh core value: to promote the health of our stakeholders through healthy eating education. In our stores, we give you the tools you need for choosing the most nutritious foods and healthy recipes, as well as offering classes with nutritionists and cooking coaches to help inspire good health and well-being. Stop by your local store today and learn more about our Health Starts Here program and wellness clubs, or online at wholefoodsmarket.com/healthstartshere.
Hi, and welcome back to Radio Cherry Bomb. I'm your host, Julia Tertian. We were just speaking with Marissa from Nourish Kitchen and Table, and now we're going to turn the microphone over to Jasmine Moy. Hi, Jasmine.
Hi.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into all things legal, I'd like to start just like we did with Marissa, with just a little information about where you're from for listeners to get to know you a little bit better.
I'm from Chicago originally, but I moved to New York for law school. And after law school, I was doing corporate litigation for a while, and I hated it. As most people who are in corporate litigation would also probably agree that they don't love their jobs that much either.
They're not at Roberta's at 2
They're
o'clock
not at
Roberta's.
So I started doing some food writing, just freelance, just to feed my soul a little bit.
While you were still doing
doing corporate law, and met a lot of people in the industry, and I've always been a big fan of the restaurant industry. I've always had waitressing jobs all through high school and through college, and have always been also a terrible cook. So those things are married to each other. And then found a way to kind of seek my interests in the food and restaurant scene into a job.
And tell us a little bit about the firm that you work with.
I work with Taylor Colicchio. It's a small firm based out of New Jersey. But I work primarily with Phil Colicchio, who is cousin of Tom, lawyer of Tom.
Cousin of Tom. What it says on his business card?
Well, you know, I always say they're cousins because a lot of people assume they're brothers because they share the same last name, but they're actually cousins. But Phil has been in this line of business for about 20 years. So he's been doing it a long time, and I happen to have been directed to him by a friend of mine in New Orleans who works for John Besh. Actually, I was kind of complaining about how I hated my job, and she said, "There's this guy, Phil. You need to meet him." And, 3 months later, I was doing kind of consulting work for him. And then it finally moved into full-time work when I was able to leave the case that I've been working on for a long time. Yeah.
I think it's so interesting because I think that people who don't work in law, like I know for me for a long time, I just thought like, oh, there are lawyers in the world. Like I don't know about them specializing in one thing or another. And just as the general public, it's good to know that there are lawyers for every single industry and department. I think it's great for lawyers to know that you can work with whatever clients, you know, suit your interests. So.
Yeah. And you know, it's great that we have that specialty, and I would really recommend that anybody who is in the hospitality industry, who needs a lawyer, really find somebody with that kind of concentration, because there's a lot of institutional knowledge that we have about the way things could go wrong or you know, I guess being a lawyer is a lot about protecting you from the things that go wrong, but there's a lot of, you should do this so that this doesn't happen. You shouldn't do this.
Wrong.
Yeah. That somebody who doesn't have that base, you may not be able to help you, or they may not be able to help you avoid some of the common pratfalls that I think some people in the industry may hit.
And what are some of the ways that people do find a firm such as the one that you work for? Is it all word of mouth?
You know what? We mentioned this, you know, before the show started, but there's a lot of word of mouth.
Yeah.
A lot. You know, half the clients I have been referred from the first set of clients that I first brought to the firm. You know,
you were saying, is a great compliment.
It's amazing to know that you're doing a good job and your clients think you're doing a good job, and that they want to bring you with them and want to involve you in projects that they end up investing in when they start to get a little bit bigger. But you know, we probably get one or two emails a week from new clients who've been referred by somebody that we've worked with in the past. Mm-hmm. So client referrals are a huge deal. And I also networking, you know, my boss does a lot of golfing. I don't golf, but I do a lot of,
do you play poker?
I don't play poker either.
We got to start a league.
Also don't
smoke
the cigars, but you know, New York is great for this purpose also. But you know, Cherry Bomb that had the Jubilee conference was fantastic. And the Toklas Society also fantastic. And there's a couple different food gal groups that are on Facebook. And I think we as women have been doing, at least in the last 5 years, a really, really great job of trying to help each other out
and just meet each
and
other
guide each
and
other. Yeah,
talk to each
exactly.
other.
And exactly.
I think just the more the conversations happen, the more things will come out of it. So thank you for talking to us.
Of course.
I want to talk a little bit about, just sort of in the vein of what we were talking with Marissa about businesses beginning. I want to talk about ways you help businesses start, and also more importantly, how you help them last for a long time. So when you start working with entrepreneurs, what kinds of things do you counsel them on, specifically in the restaurant?
You know, it's good
industry?
That we talked to Marissa first about the money part, because I will have a chef come to me who will be a fantastic chef, and I'll say, I found a space. And it can be a real, you know, BITCH, trying to find a space. I mean, that process. So when you find a space, you're so excited and the chef is great. He's going to be talented. The place is going to make money. And then I say, okay, well, do you have your investors? And they'll say, well, no, I don't have those yet. And I was like, well, then you're not going to be able to sign this lease. So honestly, the first thing people need to do is find the money before they do anything else. They need to find the money. They have to have people ready and waiting. And then you find the space and you jump on it. You can sign a lease within, you know, some back and forth. It could take 2 months. If you're both really pushing, you can get it done in 2 weeks. And then that money has to be there.
Yeah.
You know, that security deposit has to be
like an apartment in New York.
Yeah, of course. Like, you really have to be ready to jump on it. So, you know, I always recommend to chefs who are working for somebody else, they're not the owner, they're not a partner, start networking. Make sure you're going through the dining room. Make sure you're talking to people. Try to be forming these relationships now so that you've got a whole Rolodex of people to call when you really might need something.
And
so first they need the money. And I said, do you have the money? If you don't have the money, you got to figure it out first.
Go get it.
If they have the money, you know, we negotiate the lease for them. We help them negotiate the lease.
So that's when a lawyer comes in.
Yep.
Okay.
Primarily, when they're negotiating the lease. You know, you kind of have the money. You may have an operating agreement that you've been negotiating with them, but it's hard to kind of, it all kind of has to happen at the same time.
Yeah.
You have to have your space. You have to know how much that space costs so that you can figure it into your budgets. Your budgets and your pro forma are how you find investors. You say, this is what our expenses are going to be. This is how much we think we're going to make. And so this is what our net profits are going to be. A lot of it kind of has to be tied in, or at least you have to have a range for what you're going to spend on a monthly rent.
And a realistic range.
You know, and then then the pro forma is what kind of allows you to find investors. Investors look at it and they say, this looks like a reasonable business plan. You know, the pricing looks great, X, Y, and Z. You know, I'm interested in this. So it's kind of at the same time, you're trying to put together probably a partnership agreement or an operating agreement with your investors.
I was about to ask, do you work on those? So do you step in earlier in the process to help negotiate how that relationship
Many times the lease kind of will happen. It ends up happening first. Many times, you know, you have the part, you might have a draft of an operating agreement that you're circulating to make sure everybody kind of is on the same page about the terms, about how you're paying the money back, and it, you know, if you're offering a preferred rate or an interest rate on that money. And so you kind of maybe will have a term sheet with your investors, and then you have like the letter of intent that you sign with your lease, which is almost like a short version of a lease. Yeah. So you kind of get those out and done, and so everybody's on the same page, so that when it's time to jump on the lease and time to get the operating agreement signed, it's all together. Absolutely. You know, so you know, the operating agreement can come first, the lease can come first. I've seen it happen both ways, but they happen.
But you need all the things.
You need them all together, and you kind of prep them. You kind of get ready, and then you pounce when that's time.
And so before those sort of documents come, you know, are realized and are made, when a business owner or someone with a business idea even comes to you, just even for like a consultation, what do you recommend that they bring with them, and how should they prepare for that meeting?
You know what? It's good to come with at least some sort of budget. Mm. We can always help you say this is a little unrealistic, or you're never gonna make a business that will last if your rent. We kind of have guidelines. You know, you're
acting a bit as almost like an accountant in that sense.
A little bit. You know, we've been in the business long enough that we can say, listen, if your rent is more than 10% of your gross sales, that's tough. If your payroll is over a certain percentage, that's going to be tough. You know, you want to try to keep your profits somewhere around 20%. It would be awesome if they were 25. And so you kind of are really looking at all your expenses and breaking them down and trying to make them fit into what is kind of an established, proven guideline for what you need to be paying out and what you need to be taking in order to make enough money to grow and to pay your investors back and to invest back into yourself and things like that. So, you know, I would recommend them coming with at least some kind of a budget, some kind of an idea of what the project is going to look like, the price points that they're going to be able to, you know, sell their items at, you know, what neighborhoods they might want to be in, things like that. Some kind of really concrete
information
and to show that they've put some real time and thought into it first. Because you want to do as much work as you can before involving the lawyers, because we cost money.
Absolutely.
So you kind of want to do as much of it as you can.
Absolutely. And speaking of, how does it normally work with clients? Do you work with them on sort of a case-by-case basis? Like every time they need an agreement, they come to you? Do people keep you on a retainer? How does that all work?
Oh, yeah. You know, when you first hire a lawyer, you send in a retainer check. Which we take just to say, it's kind of our way of doing the handshake. Okay. You know, send us some cash, and just so that we know you have something in the bank. Mm-hmm. But typically, people spend down the retainers, and then you know, you just bill out. But because we do mostly transactional work, they call us when they need an agreement, when they need a lease, when they need a partnership agreement. You know, usually a small business will say, oh, well, we also want employment agreements or confidentiality agreements, mm-hmm. or a contract for an independent contractor, you know, so we do those on an as needed basis, but really we just will randomly get phone calls after not hearing from somebody for 8 months. And, you know, hopefully it's good news. Hopefully they're building and they're opening a new business. Hopefully it's not, we're closing our business and we need your help because we need to sell all of our assets and things like that. But that also will happen as well. So we're mostly involved when you're opening and also when you're closing.
For sure. Or transitioning.
Yep.
Or
transitioning. Yes.
Things
yes.
in between. But it's such a good point about the fees associated with legal counsel. I think that, at least to me, feels like incentive enough to get all your stuff organized before you even take that meeting. And it's, I think the whole idea of everything we're talking about today is like, I mean, everyone has tons of ideas and like, but it's the people who make them happen are the ones who really break down sort of the contents of what their fantasies are. Mm-hmm. And it's like, I have this dream to open this thing, but like, I can actually make that happen if I figure out all these parts. So I think
Absolutely. Talking
to you both, it's amazing to just think about like so much that's possible. What do you think is the most misunderstood part about hiring a lawyer, or sort of rather, what do you wish more people knew about bringing on legal counsel?
I mean, lawyers, I think, generally have such a terrible reputation as being, you know, money-sucking, terrible mm-hmm. people. You know, I think people underestimate the value of a lawyer, because you don't see the value of a lawyer when things are going well, you see the value of a partnership contract or any contract at all when things go bad.
Sure.
And so it's easy to get a quick operating agreement done. It's easy to print one out online and spend $100 on it. But what that's not going to do is, for the most part, protect you in the event
Absolutely.
That something happens, in the event you need to raise more money, or in the event you're losing members or things like that. So it's, you know, by the time you figure it out, if you have a bad lawyer, it's too late.
Yeah.
So there's something. So I always say,
it's like a plastic surgery. You shouldn't notice.
I always say that, or plastic surgery or LASIK. Like you don't want to be cheap with it at the beginning because it'll cost you 10 times as much on the back end.
For sure.
And there are a lot of things that people don't think about. So when you sit down and talk with a lawyer, any lawyer, you know, we can say, have you done this? Have you registered your trademarks? If you haven't registered your marks, that can be something that's really expensive on the back end. You know, you can be in business for 10 years and then get a cease and desist letter from another company who did the process, registered the marks, and you find out that you don't actually own the marks
that
you've been using.
A lot.
It does. It's like a very overlooked thing. Mm-hmm. But when you sit down and talk to a lawyer, they can say, here are the 10 things that we need to get done. You know, in this order, this is the in order of priority. These are the things that you need to consider, that you need to button up in order to have a strong, successful business. And we do a lot of also counseling about business structure. You know, if you have an easily replicable, you know, something that you could see being franchised, something that you could see, you know, growing and opening up in very similar style, you know, all over the country or even just all over New York, you want your business, your corporate structure to be such that it allows for growth.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, so it all depends on what you want to do. And if you just want to open one place, then that's one thing. So when you talk to lawyers, they can help guide you into the business structure that makes the most sense for you based on what you want and what you see for your future.
Awesome.
But that's that kind of thing is almost impossible to know on your own. It's hard to know if you're not even a lawyer at all. So, you know, there's a very specific expertise, but it can be kind of hidden. You know, you might not know that you need these things.
No, there's almost a bit of sort of career counseling involved in all of it.
Of course.
And just getting in touch with what you want. Like, what do you want your life to consist of? Do you want to own a business? Do you want to work for, you know, all
of
those
course.
Kinds of questions. Earlier on the show, Marissa spoke sort of candidly about being a woman in the restaurant industry, specifically about raising money. I was wondering if you could speak to your experience, both in sort of the world of law and also in the hospitality industry. Do you feel like being a woman has impacted these experiences at all?
Oof. There are a lot of women lawyers, but in the industry that I'm in, very few of them. I mean, I've never, almost never, there's one other female lawyer who's doing this kind of work in the city. Her name is Olga Hoffman. But I've almost never worked across from a woman. It's almost always guys. Mm. And it's hard to know. It's hard for me to measure if there has been any time at which opposing counsel has taken me either less seriously because I'm a woman or less seriously because I'm under the age of 50 or things like that. I mean, I think that can be hard to measure, but I would say that almost every investor that you find in a restaurant is a man. Many of the chefs are men. I mean, I have a bunch of female clients now, which I'm really excited about. And I love helping women in particular grow their business. And I, you know, I love guiding them, but I wish I had more female clients. I wish more women were taking the risk. It's risky.
Yeah.
I wish more women were doing it. I wish that there were more women to be mentors. I see and completely understand, and I'm in the position of having a mentor who's a man. Mm-hmm. And he's a fantastic mentor, but I would also love for there to be more female mentors. So, I mean, we're certainly underrepresented in every category.
It's interesting. Last week on the show, I had Anita Lowe, who's a wonderful, wonderful chef, and her chef de cuisine, Mary Atia, on. And Mary has only ever worked at Anissa. And so when I was asking them about sort of this issue of being, or is it an issue being a woman in this industry for them, Anita spoke to some experiences, but then Mary was saying for her, it hasn't, because her experience has been under Anita's leadership. And so the more women there are in these positions, such as you are in yours, I mean, you can be a mentor for lawyers who are coming up and all that. And I feel optimistic about where it's going. So,
I do too. I mean, as I said, you know, almost every client that I have brought into the firm over the last 6 months has been a woman.
Yeah.
And it's something that I'm very uniquely excited about and proud of.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
And also, I don't know. I hate it. This is. I feel like this is going to come out sounding a little silly, but I feel like women can talk to each other in a way that is more comfortable, just the way men can play golf and do, you know, men have a way of communicating that can be a certain style. And I think women also can have a certain style of communicating. And so I feel as if I'm a better lawyer for my clients who are women, because sure. we communicate on a certain level yeah. that I don't know if my clients would have the same conversations with a lawyer who is a man, or, you know, comfort levels can be different. And certainly negotiating tactics can be different as well. On both ends, you know, a very aggressive negotiator can work one way. Somebody who kind of does a little bit of a softer sell. So it's nice for me to even work with my boss, Phil, because we complement each other that way. Yeah. It's nice to have one of each. Yeah. You know what I mean? Also,
yeah, no, for sure. Speaking of these sort of clients that you've been bringing on recently, a lot of female chefs and et cetera, do you have any advice specifically for women who are looking to bring on legal counsel?
I honestly think that women's biggest issue is honestly the fundraising mm-hmm. perspective, very honestly. So if I were giving advice to women, you know, the legal stuff is kind of, you hire the lawyer and then the lawyer takes care of it and you have to worry about it. But the fundraising is something that they have to do. So, I mean, I think a lot of the advice that I would be giving to women would not be particular to law, but really particular to how important it is to be networking and fundraising and things like that, because that's probably going to be your largest hurdle.
Yeah. Speaking of, I was just curious about potential clients. You know, maybe they're not opening a restaurant. Maybe it's not something as sort of financially daunting or something like that. But clients who might not be able to afford legal counsel, do you recommend any organizations that are geared towards business owners that you would encourage them going to?
Yeah, the Economic Development Council, or maybe it's a small business association. They can pair you up with lawyers who work pro bono. I think that there's a limit of time that they'll spend on, you know, your paperwork, but they have forms for you to use and things like that, and it's free. So I think you get one or two free hours of legal advice when you're going through the city and using the government agencies yeah. that are there. It's not going to be help is not going to be as in depth, but it's better to have the lawyer to even yeah. send you the form that they've approved and that they've drafted, rather than pulling a form from off of the internet
for sure.
that nobody's read.
And maybe for someone sort of in between, maybe you kind of start there and then go to someone like you just to get the information,
yeah,
to know what to bring to you.
And you know what?
That.
I always encourage people to at least call or email me, because what I do a lot of, in fact, is a lot of advising before we have a formal relationship. You know, I think that's why I have half the clients that I have, is because I've been very open to having conversations with people, very open to giving advice for, you know, free advice, but very yeah. open to having these conversations to let them know, you know, on a basic level, the things that they should be looking out for, the things that they should be doing or shouldn't be doing. And then I trust that when they're ready to hire somebody that they'll call me.
No,
and they always do.
Exactly.
Exactly.
Sure.
So it's a little bit of it's you work together.
Awesome.
For sure.
Yeah, I like that we're all kind of investing in each other. It was right? terrific. This was all so productive, and I feel like I have a billion more questions for both of you, but we're sadly almost out of time. So I'm going to ask you the Cherry Bomb Q&A, the most important questions
awesome.
Of all. So number one, Jasmine, sweet or salty?
Salty.
What did you have for breakfast today?
Oh, I made a smoothie with almond milk and raspberries and coconut water and some green powder, just to feel like I have something, I don't know, healthy in it. I don't know.
If I were to look into your refrigerator right now, what might I be surprised to find?
A lot of Pedialyte, actually. I really like wine, but I found that since I hit the age of 30 that I just don't like bounce back the way that I used to. So I always have Pedialyte in my fridge.
So it's your
for the morning after.
The morning cocktail.
Yeah.
What's your go-to snack?
Oh, I eat a lot of dill pickles. And also hummus. I've always got hummus in my fridge. Mm. Mm-hmm.
Favorite time of the day?
Morning.
So you guys are meant to be, you and Marissa. Where do you want to travel to next?
I'm spending Thanksgiving in San Miguel de Allende, which is like a UNESCO World Heritage
yeah.
site outside of Mexico City. I'm excited about that. But my next big trip, I think I'd like to go to India, southern
awesome.
India.
Mm-hmm. Lastly, what was your favorite meal when you were a kid?
It's like a Dutch dish, maybe, but all of my Ohio relatives used to make it, but it's called pot pie. And it's not a pie, but they're like egg noodles that you cook in a broth with, and you serve it with a roast, and veggies. So it's just like a hearty kind of dish, so, and mashed potatoes, but egg noodles
mashed
and beef.
And awesome. I'm all for it. That sounds super. Jasmine, thank you so much for being here today. Where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, my email.
Or in real life.
Yeah, sure. my email is jmoy@tcslawyers.com.
Awesome.
Just shoot me an email. Happy to talk about anything, whatever.
Get ready for your inbox. Marissa, who was on earlier, your site is nourishkitchentable.com. Is that right? And your location is 95 Greenwich Avenue, not to be confused with Greenwich Street, I'm going to add, and it's just off of West 12th Street, and it's next door to Equinox. As always, thank you everyone for listening. Tune in next Wednesday at 2 o'clock on Heritage for another episode of Radio Cherry Bomb.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archive programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter @heritage_radio. You can email us questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.